I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. On this day, we honor Dr. Martin Luther King. He once said, I love this quote, our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter. And so things that matter for all things political at an unusual time this week, but we didn't want to miss it because so much has been going on and so much will be going on. And one of my favorite all things political guests is with us this hour, Clarence Page. Clarence is the 1989 Pulitzer Prize winner for commentary. His column is syndicated nationally by Tribune Media Services. He's a member of the Chicago Trib's editorial board, also a regular contributor to many TV news outlets. He has received Lifetime Achievement Awards from the National Society of Newspaper Columnists, the National Association of Black Journalists. He was inducted in 92 into the Chicago Journalism Hall of Fame. And his latest book is The Culture Worrier, Selected Columns 1984 to 2014, Reflections on Race, Politics, and Social Change. Because of the nature of this day and his work in race, we will talk about Congressman John Lewis and the response from Donald Trump. We'll be looking at this continuing story of collusion between Moscow and the Trump campaign. No public evidence behind the dossier. We ask Clarence if he believes that we can trust Donald Trump. And what's the status of the investigations? Could the new president shut the investigations down before they even get started? We will be looking at Barack Obama and his presidency and the difference that he may have made. We'll also be talking about journalism and what's ahead for the press. Our guest, Clarence Page, is a member of the Committee to Protect Journalists, and he has written about, a number of things recently. He's written about Meryl Streep and the Golden Globe Awards, her comments there. He's written about the Trump cabinet picks. We will talk about those. We will talk about, a whole number of issues with him. And welcome your phone calls as well. 800-486-8655 is the number. Oh, we'll talk about health care, too, because today there was news of an interview with Washington Post yesterday in which he said, do you know that he really wanted to make sure that insurance was available to everybody? And so we'll talk about if he may have a plan that's different and whether or not it would be acceptable to the Republicans. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We are on Twitter at K Dunn Show. And Clarence Page, hello. Thank you so much for being with us on this day.
Hello, and a happy King Day to you, Kathleen.
Thank you, and a happy King Day to you. Oh, we have so much to talk about. Let's start with Congressman John Lewis and his comments that he didn't believe that Donald Trump was a legitimate president. This brings us right into all of the Russia stuff. What do you think? Is Donald Trump a legitimate president, or is there enough hanging over his head now with all of these investigations into Trump and Russia, Trump perhaps advisors in Russia? And I mean, the whole thing is just nobody knows for sure what's going on.
Yeah, that's right. First of all, in my view, I think Donald Trump is certainly legally legitimate. Just going by the rules is the way it works, where you have a president-elect who received a minority of the popular vote, but a majority of the electoral vote, and that's the way our Constitution is set up. At the same time, though, I think John Lewis was really talking more about a moral authority there, a moral legitimacy, in that he sees Donald Trump as having been the beneficiary of an election that may have somehow been rigged in his favor by Russian intrusion. We know, if you believe our intelligence establishment, we know that the Russians did try to interfere with our election. There's no evidence that they actually succeeded in changing votes. It's possible they might have, but we don't have any actual evidence of it. You know, something like certainly breaking into the voting machines and that sort of thing electronically. There's no evidence of that that we know of, but there are a lot of people, though, who feel that Trump did receive so much aid from the Russians, and more suspicious that he himself is so reluctant to say anything negative about Vladimir Putin, who may be the one of the last people on the planet that Trump has not said anything negative about. It's really a very suspicious situation to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so I think John Lewis certainly got attention and certainly made his point in a way that has made headlines, is still making headlines, and maybe that was his main purpose, getting attention to his dislike of Donald Trump and why.
Mm-hmm. And now you have some 24, 25 members of Congress saying they will not attend the inauguration.
That's right. And that's quite striking. I think, Democrats are in a situation right now where they're wondering, should we treat the Republicans the way they treated Obama when he came into office? And there's a sense on the part of a lot of people that the Republicans were so resistant to anything that Obama wanted, that Democrats have no obligation to cooperate with them at all, certainly not in undoing Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. Republicans at a certain point just stopped working with Democrats on that. And now Democrats say, okay, you want to change it? It's all yours, buddy. You catch all the grief now, because Democrats caught all of any frustration people had with their health care. They were suddenly blaming Democrats for it. And that's, of course, that's a whole separate issue, which we can get to. But I think this is what John Lewis, though, was striking at when he spoke about the legitimacy of the Trump presidency. There's still a lot of discontent in the land about this, and in his view, there's lots of reason to be.
Right. I don't know how long you've been aware. You're in the circles of the press in Washington, but this dossier has been, I feel like we're in a John le Carré novel. I really do. I'm reading all this, trying to figure out where the leaks are, who's talked to who, how many intelligence agencies. It's fascinating. The dossier, I understand, has been in the hands of lots of news organizations, certainly the FBI, later on Senator John McCain, some politicians. But I would imagine that all kinds of people in the press in D.C. and at the BBC and in Israel and elsewhere are really trying to prove some of the allegations that are in this. Why is it so hard to prove these allegations, Clarence?
Well, the allegations were made by a former spy who has now gone underground. Nobody can find him, evidently. And it was the result of work that was done for opposition research, both by rival Republicans and Democrats, rivals to Donald Trump, that is. It's very hard to go back and confirm something that allegedly happened a few years back. When you say that a lot of news organizations have had this for months, it's true. Mother Jones had a story back in, I believe it was October, about this investigation going on. What's broken it open now is that BuzzFeed decided to release the entire document, even though it is not confirmed. All that we have is that intelligence agencies, among others, are investigating these charges, and that this was information was revealed to the president and other important people at the top, so they would be aware of it. But beyond that, trying to nail this down as something that is actually factual and accurate, we're a long way from that.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much of a high level of confidence. That's the term the intelligence agencies use, a high level of confidence in the veracity of the document. That is making headlines. And there's no control over TV comedians. Saturday Night Live had a field day.
Yes, they are. Their ratings are going up, aren't they, Clarence?
Yes, indeed. It was, just with the whole issue of whether or not Donald Trump engaged in some perverse sexual acts and all in a hotel that provided ample fodder for the comics, late night comedians, and SNL. And it remains to be seen how damaging that's going to be for Trump. I can think about all of the negative stories and propaganda that was put out on the web regarding Barack Obama and his family. And I could feel some measure of sympathy for Donald Trump if there's nothing to this. But he's played the same game himself in supposedly doubting President Obama's birth certificate when I think no common sense would tell us that Trump knew all along that Obama's birth certificate was legitimate, but he was able to use that issue to put himself into the national spotlight as a political figure in opposition to Obama. So he's getting a taste of his own medicine now, one might
say. And he did it for years. It wasn't just, you know, brought it up once. He brought it up year after year after year, and it wasn't
That's right. For over 4 years, that's right.
Does the president-elect, do you think that he has the power to be able to shut down an FBI investigation into Russian meddling? Could he shut down a Senate Intelligence Committee investigation into Russian election meddling?
He would. I think separation of powers is quite clear in regard to the president's ability to shut down a Senate or a House investigation. In terms of the FBI, I'm reminded of Richard Nixon's Saturday Night Massacre,
right,
where he tried to stop his own attorney general from pursuing Watergate offenses, and it turned out to be one of the biggest scandals of the Nixon administration. And I think Donald Trump would just bring a lot of backlash against himself if he tried to obstruct justice, whether in reality or in perception. So we will see.
Mm-hmm. Then you've also got this relationship, which is hard to figure out how this is going to play out, this relationship between the president-elect and the intelligence community, with many in the intelligence community bringing him all this information, which they're going to continue to do. Former intelligence chief Brennan saying over the weekend, if he doesn't have confidence in the intelligence community, what signal does that send to our partners and allies as well as our adversaries? What signal does it send? What intelligence is he going to listen to? What is he going to discard? Is he going to fire everybody? What will he do?
Well, this becomes very damaging. Brennan is right, of course. If our own president doesn't believe our own intelligence establishment, it knocks the U.S. down a few pegs, because what do we have without our credibility on the international scene? I have in the past compared Trump's rise to Silvio Berlusconi in Italy, who I used to I told some of my Italian friends that I will no longer make fun of you for electing Berlusconi because look what we got. The fact is, Berlusconi damaged Italy's credibility on the planet in various ways with his various antics, but he got reelected a couple times, served until he finally was indicted. Because he knew what was on the minds of the of ordinary working class folks in his country, and he used that to get himself reelected again and again. Donald Trump is following that same approach. But if he is so loose with the truth as he has been with us in this country, if he's that loose on the international stage, it can't help but damage our credibility. But it's rather remarkable, though, how Trump and Putin have this remarkable rapport, evidently, even though they haven't met face-to-face yet. Nevertheless, there's they have a lot in common, and it kind of reminds us, you know, these two and President Erdogan in Turkey and other autocrats, they have a lot in common. So on the international scene, they have their own way of coding and decoding what the other is talking about.
What's the story with his health care plan? All of a sudden, out of the blue, he gives this interview to the Washington Post saying that he's going to have insurance for everybody, that the plan's going to be put together soon. He didn't indicate that it was a Republican plan. It was his plan. What do you know about this?
This is a big surprise to everybody.
It is.
Until now, Donald Trump has said, I'm going to repeal and replace Obamacare, and you know, replace it with something terrific. You know, just very broad, vague, and general. And he's being no more specific now than he was in the past. The only difference is for the first time he's saying he wants health care or you know, health insurance for everybody. He has not said that in the past. And I got to say that it reminds me of when Barack Obama said, if you like your health plan, you can keep it. And said that repeatedly on the campaign trail. Even as he said it, I said, he shouldn't say that because in a country this big and a program this complex, there's bound to be some people who won't be able to keep their current health plan. And there have been, and PolitiFact, I think it was named that as the lie of the year, or whopper of the year, as they call it. I think the same thing is happening with Donald Trump right now. He is starting to see that Obamacare slash the ACA has a lot of good things about it. He said that when he came out of his meeting with Obama, indicated now he wants to keep certain features like the lift the ban on pre-existing conditions and keep your child on your health plan until they turn 26. Features like that he likes. In general, he likes the aspects of the plan that spend money on people. He hates the part where people have to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And well, that's like everybody else. We all hate the fact that we got to pay for it, and that's the part where folks get up in arms about Obamacare. But the fact is that there is no consensus on any one plan on the Republican side. The Republicans have a number of plans proposed by different members of the House, but none of them is even close to having a majority or some kind of a working consensus across the body. And that's been true for years, ever since
right.
the original Obamacare debate. So I don't think anything has changed there, and I'm just waiting to see. And Democrats in the House and Senate are waiting to see what Republicans are going to come up with. As I said before, their attitude is, okay, you don't like our plan, you go right ahead and you put something together. You got the power now, but you also take the blame.
Absolutely. You wrote in a recent column, so let me make this kind of a two-part question. You asked President Obama why he didn't just expand Medicare for all as his health care plan. What was his answer to that? And do you think, possibly, that that's what Donald Trump might be thinking about doing?
Well, I think, you know, when he said, just to answer your second part first, when Donald Trump said coverage for everybody, I think that was the terms he was thinking of. You know, like we have Medicare now is actually the most popular program that the government has, or maybe second behind defense. It's also rife with financing problems or challenges, but it's not going to go away soon. The government would do whatever they can to save it. Whereas the Affordable Care Act is much more piecemeal, there's 20 million people who aren't covered for various reasons. Part of it is resistance by some Republican governors and this sort of thing. But in any case, I think Trump knows what is a popular idea, the idea of health care for everybody. As in the past, he doesn't mind making a promise without worrying about whether he can keep it or how. And that's where I think it's going to get interesting now with the Medicare debate. Some folks say this is all going to end up in a consensus leaning towards single payer, like in Canada, but you know, Republicans are dead set against that. But at the same time, though, this you know, how do you cover the cost on a program like this? That a question hasn't really been answered, and the Republicans are still mulling over what kind of an answer they can have.
Yeah.
And your first question was about Barack Obama's answer. Yeah. He, at the time, and he was a candidate. He and Hillary Clinton were engaged in a hot primary contest at the time, and one of the hot issues that week was health care. When I asked him, why don't we just extend Medicare to cover everybody? Have you thought about that? And we got a round of applause from the audience. I was asked to interview him in front of this group that was mostly organized labor folks up in New York. And suddenly spontaneous applause broke out when I said that. And Obama said, are you running for office? I said, no, that's on you, my friend. But he went into, you know, his voice got kind of downcast because he wasn't terribly proud of it. But he said that, you know, that the chances of getting a program that extensive through Congress are very difficult. And so he had come up with this plan, of which later got called Obamacare by the Republicans. But the ACA is based, you remember, on a Republican idea that was created by the Heritage Foundation and later embraced by Mitt Romney as governor of Massachusetts, and it became Romney Care, which is still in effect in that state. That was what Obama had in mind. The ACA is based on Romney Care, and is he thought he would get Republican support. It would be easier to get a coalition going. But after months and months and months, it fell apart as far as no efforts to get some Republicans who had been working with them, particularly on the Senate side, that all fell apart. So in the end, the ACA was passed without any Republican votes, mm-hmm. Leaving it understandably vulnerable. And then the administration didn't really promote it enough. This has been my complaint and a lot of other people, that we now see with polls or focus groups, people who hate Obamacare but like the ACA. And when they're told, you know, they're both the same thing, it's like a complete surprise.
I know.
That's just how effective the anti-Obamacare propaganda has been.
Absolutely, and how he didn't become enough of a cheerleader. He right. is somebody over the weekend, and I think this is true about him. I got a little bit distracted from the news of the day, although I've been heavy at it all weekend, but I was watching his presentation to the Chicago Cubs this afternoon, and the guy is so darned eloquent. You know, what he had to say about the role. I'm not a Cubs fan. I'm a White Sox fan, too. I'm a Brewers fan, but I grew up in Chicago. So I was a White Sox fan with the president. But what he said, how he talked about his wife and the role of sports in moving this country forward and people getting along. The guy is so eloquent, isn't he? I am going to miss that eloquence.
I didn't know you were a Southsider, by the way.
Well, yeah, I was. Hyde Park. I was born in Hyde Park.
Oh, just like my wife. Okay,
yeah,
we're a mixed marriage because I'm a North Sider. I'm with the Cubs.
And she's a Sox fan.
Oh yeah, that's right.
That's great.
Like a good South Sider because her father was a Sox fan.
Yes, right.
But yeah, you know, this. I mean, isn't the contrast striking between Barack Obama in public and Donald Trump in public? And it's a. I'm really. Interested to see what his inauguration address is going to be like, because Trump rhetorically is still in campaign mode. Mm-hmm. He's been still taking swipes at Hillary Clinton and talking about all the great votes he got, and he obviously enjoys the crowd and all this. But as far as the specifics of his future his future agenda, he hasn't really gone into much detail on that, whereas Barack Obama, his agenda was always very clear from the beginning, like it or not. And it's not hard to see how Barack Obama is experiencing the highest approvals of his presidency, while Donald Trump's approvals have sunk to the lowest of any a new president elect since the beginning of polling.
Yeah. Well, let's welcome phone calls for you. Clarence Page is our All Things Political guest on this Dr. Martin Luther King Day, and we're delighted to have him with us. He is a Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the Chicago Tribune. He is the author of Culture Warrior, selected columns from 84 to 2014. You see him frequently on television where he talks about politics. His column is syndicated nationally by Tribune Media Services, and he's a member of the Trib's editorial board. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org, Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is @KDunnShow. 4 days before Donald Trump becomes inaugurated as President of the United States, what do you think? What do you think about all of these allegations about possible collusion with members of the Trump team with Russia? Do you feel as though you'd like those settled in some way? Or do you think that now that he is becoming president, there should be stop of the investigations, the FBI and the Senate Intelligence Committee? But what do you make of all of this? And what do you think about, well, let's talk to Clarence, too, about what's ahead for the press. He had an interesting column about what Meryl Streep said at the Golden Globes. We will talk about that. We can talk about Trump's cabinet nominations. We can talk about the outgoing administration. And we're welcoming you to join us. So let's do that in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. All right, let's go to phone calls. Willem and Colfax, first for you, Clarence. Hi, Willem.
Hi. I was just I was in high school. I was in high school when Martin Luther King was assassinated, and I remember what a profoundly sad day it was in America when that happened. And my father, who had great respect for Martin Luther King, and, you know, it just reminds me of where we were in his speech about calling America to its highest ideals, and then we have this current president-elect who I just cannot find it in any way, a way that I can respect this man. I mean, he's a proven liar. He's a very offensive and vulgar person. I think that his behavior is, you know, coached by Roy Cohn, and his whole idea that he always strikes back and he always hits hard. And even to a man like John Lewis, who, you know, distinguished American, he just can't resist some sort of cheap comment. So I think that we need, as Americans, to, you know, to resist this bully. I mean, that's what I was taught as a child. We have to resist the bully, and we have to do that in peaceful ways and in any way possible, and to resist this divide-and-conquer strategy that he is using. And the other thing that I had about this Russian thing is, if I was not mistaken, I thought I heard on the news that there was some Russian official, foreign minister, someone said that they had been in touch with the Trump campaign throughout the election. I don't know what happened to that story.
Yeah, I've heard that story, too. All right, Claire, take it all on, Clarence.
Well, the first part of that in regard to Donald Trump's impulse control and his reflexive need to hit back, even at the mildest criticism, is quite true. This has been attributed to his mentorship, if you will, with Roy Cohn of the McCarthy era fame. PBS Frontline done a couple of excellent documentaries here recently on Donald Trump and the decision points in his life that made him what he is today.
Yes.
He really has not changed for the 4 or 5 decades that we've been following Donald Trump, even back in the 70s and Studio 54 at night and the disco circuit and the Playboy About Town, et cetera. He now wants to be president without really letting us know why he wants to be president. This has been a question that is still hanging over his head, and the best we know is that he was upset with Barack Obama's roasting of him at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Of course, this was the right after Donald Trump had been campaigning against Barack Obama's legitimacy, claiming there were questions about his birth certificate, which was, as we all know, a big hoax in itself. But this is now a time when Trump needs to be thinking about how to be presidential, and that still hasn't happened yet. As far as the contact between the Trump campaign and the Russians, it's hard to separate truth from rumor here. Of course, Donald Trump's sons said at one point during the campaign that Trump had a lot of business enterprises in Russia. They didn't go into specifics on that. But there have been a lot of, stories floating around about the contact that they've maintained. But one thing we do know is that General Flynn, Trump's nominated national security advisor, was on the phone with the Russians the same day that Obama was approving new sanctions against Russia. And what that involved, we just don't know.
And Flynn and his son are putting notices up, tweeting about what happened at that pizza place in Washington where they're accusing Hillary Clinton's campaign of doing human sex trafficking and somebody shows up with a gun. I mean, this stuff is just way out there.
I know that pizza place, by the way.
Do you?
We used to take our son over there after Cub Scouts and this sort of thing. It's a family pizzeria. There on Connecticut Avenue, on the north end of Washington, near Chevy Chase, very nice neighborhood. This crazy internet rumor fomented by Alex Jones and some others has just terrorized the people who work right there on that street, because these internet rumors have said that there's also secret tunnels below the pizzeria that lead to all the other stores on the street. And like Politics and Prose Bookstore is right there, a very prominent bookstore in Washington. You see them on C-SPAN sometimes. They will, or C-SPAN Books, they'll do programs out of Politics and Prose and all. And they're like a couple doors away from the pizzeria, and they got harassing phone calls and this sort of thing. It's really appalling. But this is the kind of thing that happens when the paranoid style of American politics surfaces in the age of Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have people who, somebody's calling in, she didn't say, so she left a message about, she knows that Trump isn't great, but that we need to back him rather than to trash him so much, and thinks that we're doing too much trashing of Donald Trump. My question to you, Clarence, is, I mean, there's so much about this that is really deeply troubling. I mean, deeply troubling. The whole Russian connection is a deeply troubling thing for this country if it turns out to be true. I don't know how we handle this. And so you've got a large segment of the American population who's very worried about him becoming president. You have massive demonstrations that will be taking place in Washington. Some have started, but I would imagine there'll be a lot this weekend. You have a very a divisive president-elect. I don't know how the heck you bring people together. I don't know what we do about this. So you tell me, what do we do about this?
Well, there is no overnight solution. By the way, I've got a couple of friends coming from Chicago to stay with us while they march at the Women's March.
Oh. And,
this is something that's really captured the public's imagination. But yeah, there is a lot of anxiety. I talked to a Washington psychiatrist a couple of weeks ago.
Really?
Said that the number of his patients are just beside themselves, and he himself was worried. He just, you know, how could we possibly have nominated this man? And yeah, it has shaken people up, and I think it's well. I always try to be an optimist in the long run. I think, you know, if we pull through this without a nuclear war, that we will be better for it, better for the experience. That's kind of a low bar.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
You know, as long as we don't have a nuclear war. But the fact is, though, we do have a lot of discontent in the country over economic issues. And you know, my own hometown back in Ohio, I've mentioned before, is a classic example of a Trump country, because the factories and jobs I grew up with aren't there anymore, and people feel abandoned, and the, you know, jobs are down, and the opiate use is up. It's like opiate overdoses. Now Ohio leads the country. We've surpassed Vermont now. And so that's why Trump won, really, because one party was addressing these issues of concern to people's daily lives. The other party was not, and the party that was happened to be Donald Trump's party.
Right.
And so now we got him. We got to do something with him.
Yeah.
Let's see what he's going to do.
Thanks, Willem, for your call. Anita in Lindenhurst, Illinois. Hi, Anita.
Hi, this is a really energizing conversation. I just wanted to put this out there and get your comments. And, you know, they keep talking about how, and what the Republicans have said all along is that this country can't afford the Affordable Care Act. And the fact that over 20 million people now have insurance that didn't before doesn't faze them, because the whole idea is to not cut the profits to their buddies, the insurance companies. And what we see now, which is just such, it's just absolutely blasphemous, instead of this almost First Lady, Melania, telling us what her cause is going to be, what she's going to do for the country, instead of that, she has said that they are going to have a state-of-the-art glamour room put in that her makeup artist is going to spend an hour and a half in every day to make her up perfectly. And that's the most important thing to her that she has, and this is a quote, perfect lighting. She must have perfect lighting. I'd like to know, are the taxpayers going to be paying for that? Paying for her and her son to fly back and forth, because they're only going to live a little bit of the time in D.C. in the White House. The rest, they're going to stay right where they are so that Barron can still go to school in New York.
Where did that story come from about the makeup? I haven't heard that story, Anita.
Yes, that was online, and that was right from her makeup artist, is the one that gave that information to the press. And the thing is that the last two administrations both had two daughters, and they moved them with them to go to school there.
Yeah. Okay, let's get a response. Clarence?
Well, I haven't seen that story either.
Until I
know where it came from, other than just the internet. I know there's a lot of fake news on the internet in regard to both Republicans and Democrats. But that story certainly plays into feeling that do we have a Marie Antoinette type of family moving into the White House or not? But the other question she asked, though, about do the taxpayers have to pay for the transportation? As a rule, whatever the president and his family do in an official trip, that gets paid for by the taxpayers. But if it's a personal trip, then they have to pay for it. So we will see how well everybody sticks to those rules. But that's the way it's been in the past.
What's ahead for the press, Clarence?
Well, we already are. Well, for one thing, we in the press are always examining ourselves and arguing about ourselves and complaining about ourselves, even more so than the general public, believe it or not. And so there's a general alarm on the part of my Washington colleagues in regard to like a news conference last week where Donald Trump actually yelled back at reporters and got into a shouting match with the reporter from CNN because he just refused to answer the man's questions and said CNN is fake news. You know, this reminded me of news conferences back in Chicago with some of the mayors we've had in the past. You know, it's not that unusual for a colorful local or state politician to have a feisty relationship with the press. It's very unusual for that to happen with the president. Since press conferences have started being televised with JFK, I have not seen any president get into that sort of shouting match or a press secretary, for that matter. So this is something new, there's a lot of questions about how collegial the Trump administration is going to be. There's already talk about possibly moving the press conferences out of the White House briefing room next door to the old executive office building in a much bigger auditorium. What that's going to mean, we don't know, because you only get about eight or nine questions, maybe a dozen, asked during a news conference anyway, no matter how many people happen to be in the room. But the White House press corps is already upset, though, over the lack of news conferences. And also, Donald Trump likes to sneak away from the press and go do his thing with his family or whatever. He's done this several times now, going off to dinner without taking a pool reporter or photographer, which is the normal routine. He's already violating norms with the media. And then there's questions in the background about if he really gets angry, say, over some leaked documents or information, will they try to go after the reporter? And that's happened a couple of times in the Obama administration. They never actually wound up indicting a reporter, but there was talk about it was one New York Times reporter and it was also a Fox News reporter who were both being treated like persons of interest. And, of course, there was Judith Miller back in the Bush-Cheney days who went to jail rather than give up her sources.
Mm-hmm.
So there's concern that you mentioned the Committee to Protect Journalists before. We have a lot of concern at CPJ about the new administration using the powers that have resulted from the expansion of powers that both George W. Bush and Barack Obama received either legislatively or through the rules and regulations, and how Donald Trump is going to use that power, we just don't know yet.
I read your column about Meryl Streep, and you wanted to thank her for defending press freedom and mentioning she did specifically, didn't she, the Committee to Protect Journalists?
She certainly did, which was a big surprise.
Was it?
A welcome surprise by CPJ. Yeah, well, we didn't know she was a fan. everybody's a fan of hers, but that was a real surprise that night, and hundreds of dollars worth of donations came flowing in over the next couple of days as a result of Meryl Streep. So thank you, Meryl.
Clarence Page, our guest, All Things Political, you're listening to here on the Ideas Network. Clarence Page is our guest. All Things Political is what you are listening to. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Eric in Madison is next. Hi, Eric.
Hi. This is a complete disgrace to America. It's a disgrace to the majority of the people. And Donald Trump didn't win the majority of the vote. The majority of the people do not approve of Donald Trump. And he's not going to control the majority of the people. This fear is going to turn into anger, and he can get up on stage and bully all the people and talk, but this fear is going to turn into anger, and the masses of this country, he's not going to control them.
Clarence.
Yeah, I wait to see what's going to happen. We had a headline on a commentary in our paper here a few weeks ago about when will people realize they've been conned? And I don't need to tell you what the political leaning of the of the writer was, but it's a good question. A lot of people have in their minds that. I've talked to Trump supporters who said, yeah, I know he's not really going to build a wall probably, but at least he's talking about the issue or he's talking about it in the same way that I talk about it, or he's raising the same concerns that I have. I'm not hearing that from the Democrats. There are a lot of promises that Trump has put out there. And what happens if he can't answer them all in an effective way? As I mentioned, we have yet to see what he is going to do with Obamacare, as well as the Republicans in Congress. We have yet to see what he's going to do as far as immigration goes. We don't know how rough is he going to be on Muslims. He's backing away from the notion of registering Muslims, but not completely or specifically. I mean, we can just go right down the line. And the main thing is, can he produce any of the jobs that he says he's going to be able to create? Can he get rid of the ISIS problem overnight, the way he describes it? I mean, these are some lavish promises he's made. And how much does the public want to hold him accountable? And that's the real test of our democracy, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, if he can do something about jobs, he's going to swing a lot of people to his side, I think, don't you?
Well, you mean as far as if he creates jobs?
Right.
Yeah, well, if he actually does, yeah.
Right.
And he makes it sound like we're in the middle of a depression. We already have near record low unemployment, but the economic growth is not vigorous enough for critics, only around 2%. And I think Trump is promising something like 5 or 6% or something like that, which even the People's Republic of China has a hard time producing. And also wages. Wages are starting to come up now. If Donald Trump really could bring back the industrial jobs and those great salaries,
yes,
and all that,
right,
I'd be all for him. You know, if he pulls off that miracle, great. I just doubt that he's going to be able to do it.
Let's go to Gary in Merrill. Hi, Gary.
Yes, hello. I'm really surprised by all the hatred and racism coming from the left. I thought it was a party of understanding and love, but it's shocking. I hope that your guest wouldn't be in favor of some of the rumors going around that Trump shouldn't be president no matter what. So now my other point, for the last 16 years, starting with Bush We've seen the destruction now of Iraq, Afghanistan, and then Hillary and Barack, they took out Libya, Egypt, and now they would not want to end until Syria was completely destroyed. $6 trillion with nothing to show for it. And we're criticizing a man that could possibly make a deal with Putin and the head of Turkey and Assad to finally bring peace over there after what we have done?
Clarence.
Well, the question is peace at what cost? We don't have a peace plan that's been laid out. Frankly, Vladimir Putin cannot be trusted. Past presidents have discovered that. You remember George W. Bush met with Putin and came out very sanguine, saying, you know, I looked into his heart and his soul, and came out thinking, you know, Putin's a good guy under all that. Well, Bush wasn't saying that for very long, because Putin did prove to be untrustworthy. And as we have seen with his expansionism into Ukraine and the Balkans, that he is... he's got a master plan of his own, is trying to undermine NATO, and is delighted that Donald Trump wants to hold NATO to account and soften our commitment there. This ancient commitment now going back to just out of World War II, which has been able to keep us from having a World War III. Now Trump's got a whole a different kind of agenda, which he hasn't totally spelled out himself, but it does raise a lot of concern legitimately. And also, what is the answer to Syria? There's no question that, I think Barack Obama himself had said that was his greatest failure as far as foreign policy goes, whole disaster that we see, which is spilled over into destabilizing politics across Europe. And that's the kind of, we're at a point now where if we were to send in American ground troops, which I don't think Americans are eager to do yet, but in any case, whatever involvement that we have now, we have to worry about accidentally shooting down a Russian plane or causing some other damage to the Russians who are right there in coalition with Assad. So it's an even more complicated mess now than it used to be. And again, Donald Trump has not given any details as to how we're going to solve that, other than to say we're going to get rid of ISIS immediately. Well, thanks a lot.
Who are the best picks, the worst picks for cabinet?
Well, General Madden certainly looks someone that Republicans and Democrats alike really appreciate. At the same time, then there's Ben Carson, who is a wonderful surgeon. But putting him in charge of housing and urban development is just a big question mark to a lot of people. And I said this in my column, too, having covered housing for a few decades. It is a complicated issue. You can do a lot of good for a lot of people, and you can also do harm if you make mistakes with your housing policy. And I hold up the high-rise projects in Chicago as an example, which have all been torn down now at Robert Taylor Community.
Yes.
Which have become high-rise ghettos, and that's been torn down now in favor of a scattered site housing subsidies for the poor. And there's a lot of lessons have been learned over the years, and someone with more experience in housing would make more sense to me. It's also peculiar to me because real estate has been Donald Trump's life. You know, this is where the Trump brand comes from. I would think he would have wanted someone who was more of a housing specialist, although maybe he thinks he knows so much about housing that he doesn't need somebody in charge of that department who knows as much as he does.
Mm. One more phone call, about a minute left. Jocelyn in Sheboygan. Hi.
Oh, hi. So honored to talk to Clarence Page. I've admired you for many years.
Oh, it's very nice of you. Thank you.
I just think that the man that wrote the book for him or with him, The Art of the Deal, read a little article in one of my magazines that he thinks he's a sociopath. And you don't have to be a psychiatrist to agree with that reasoning, because he's so insane. You know.
All right, I need to hold you there. We're almost out of time, Clarence.
Yeah, Tony Schwartz is not a fan anymore of Donald Trump. But I love how Tony Schwartz actually he claims credit for the phrase truthful hyperbole, which Trump says in the book is his slogan for salesmanship. That's why he exaggerates so much. What a great oxymoron, right? Truthful hyperbole.
Mm. Thank you, Jocelyn. Clarence Page, always delightful to speak with you. Happy King Day, and thanks so much for being with us.
Same to you, and thanks for having me on.
Yeah, our pleasure. Clarence Page, Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the New York Times. His column is, for the Chicago Tribune. Just thinking New York Times, Chicago Tribune. His column is syndicated, and he does a lot of television analyzing as well. We thank him so much for being with us. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this hour, all of it, the students, too. And thanks to Colleen Duvall for on-air production in our studios.